Welcome to the Part-Time Money Podcast, Episode 12, Making Extra Money by Starting Your Own Food Business. I'm your host, Philip Taylor, creator of PT Money Personal Finance. The Part-Time Money Podcast is designed to help you discover new and interesting ways to make extra money and to learn the ins and outs of those money-making methods. Not from me, but from the people who are actually doing the work. Along the way, hopefully you can pick up a few entrepreneurial skills to help you in whatever money-making pursuit you take on. All right, today I'm with Jennifer Lewis of PetiforLegs.com. And Jennifer actually started a handcrafted dog treat company on the side and also happened to write a book entitled Starting a Part-Time Food Business. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much.
It's good to have you here today and learn a little bit about making special dog treats. So, but first I want to ask you, what made you want to make some part-time money?
Well, I actually started the business. I realized that the business celebrated its fifth birthday on Monday, so it's been around for 5 years. But I was in grad school at the time, and as a grad school student, you're always looking for a little extra money. So started it literally out of the kitchen of my tiny little apartment when I was in grad school in Chicago.
Oh, I see. So financially speaking, this filled a need for you, or was this just a passion?
So it was a little bit of both. I certainly had the financial need, but I also, prior to, I was at graduate school to get my MBA, but prior to that, I'd actually been a professional pastry chef.
Okay.
And so I loved cooking. I knew I wanted to somehow stay in the culinary industry, and had actually done an internship with Nestle Purina at one point, and so realized that there was this need and this desire for specialty dog treats that none of the big mass manufactured folks could meet. So I spent a couple months pulling a business plan together and really looking at the financials, because I didn't have the money to, I wasn't willing to throw some money into starting a business if I didn't think it was going to pan out. And so spent some time pulling together the business plan and then realized, you know what, I think this can work. And, you know, I think this can work while also going to school. You know, right now I work for a nonprofit part-time, and then I also have this, you know, my Petty Four Legs business part-time. So it's worked out. It's been a great way to bring in a little bit of extra income and still meet that that culinary need that I have.
I see. So talk about that a little more in detail. What's your full-time gig now, and how does this part-time job work with that?
So I currently work for a zoo here in Seattle. I'm in their marketing department.
Okay.
And, I mean, yes, animals are a big love of mine in all aspects that I do. What I've worked out with them is that usually 2 days for a couple hours I rent commercial kitchen space, and I will leave the zoo and I'll go do that for a couple hours, and then additional time on the weekends. And then a lot of, you know, I certainly spend a fair amount of time at night. I'll be packaging up orders. I just had a bunch of orders shipped this week, and I dropped the last one of those off at FedEx today. You know, like I said, it takes a little bit of, you know, kind of coordination of the schedule to make it all work. But you know, what I really love is that with the part-time business, it gives me the creativity and the artistic freedom that you don't always find in, you know, granted I work for a zoo, but it's still a corporate environment and that you don't always find in that corporate environment.
Right.
But the full-time job kind of gives me the paycheck, which, you know, certainly my business makes money, but it's nice to know that every 2 weeks I'm getting a paycheck.
Yep. That's good stuff, and I'm writing down a question for later. But that's interesting, and working marketing for a zoo. Okay, and when did you pick up that job?
I have been at that one now almost a year.
Okay. Have you always had a full-time job like this along with the business?
So it was school first, then there was probably about 7 months where I didn't have a full-time job, and I was working a couple what I would consider odd jobs.
I see.
Basically, I kind of tried to find my place, but I was on Four Legs in addition to that.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, I've had, you know, another full-time job or a variety of jobs.
I see. Was the MBA in marketing specialized, or was it the MBA helped drive you toward the entrepreneur thing?
So it was both. My concentrations were in entrepreneurship, marketing, and finance.
What made you decide this particular business over something else?
I spent a lot of time. I knew I wanted to stay in the culinary because that's where my expertise was, and that was, the arena I felt most comfortable in. And I actually explored a couple different options. I remember that I'd looked at doing sort of a high-end artisan ice cream, a wholesale business. And just as I was starting to figure out the logistics involved, so with food, there are some other components which are different from everyday businesses. We have health food permitting and USDA requirements that have to be met depending on your business. Dog treats were the one for me, since I knew it was going to be part-time, the one that I could actually see was going to be feasible with essentially the rest of the lifestyle that I wanted to have, being able to have another job and still being able to be home and see my family.
Yeah, I like it. Good stuff. So tell me about those initial stages of growing the business. How did you, develop a product and how did you maybe start advertising that product to folks who would be interested?
I first thought of the idea about, it was in the summer, and then it took me about till December to come up with the first two products that I thought were in line with mm-hmm. what I was looking for. I knew that I couldn't be an everyday treat because all the big mass manufactured folks, they do everyday treats and they're going to be able to always underprice me. So I went, I knew that I was looking for, I wanted to be a very special gifting treat. I knew the packaging had to be in line with that. It's something that catches your eye on the shelf and you get it at the holidays for your dog or for, Aunt Sophie's dog, who she's crazy about.
Right.
So it took me, it took about 6 months to go through that whole process and then set the business up. And actually, my very first client was, of all people, was Neiman Marcus. Looking back naively, I sent them samples thinking, well, why wouldn't they like it? It's a great product.
Uh-huh.
And at that point, they weren't carrying any dog treats at all. And so I actually got a contract with them to drop ship the product for them, and it was on their website. And that was the moment where I said, wait a minute, if Neiman Marcus, if they actually really want this, I think I have something
mm-hmm.
here. And so I actually took it to a business trade show in the that September and got a bunch of wholesale clients from that, and then developed the website and started to do more business-to-consumer advertising. Though I will say that the majority of my business is still my wholesale business.
I see. How did you get to Neiman Marcus? Tell me about that process. How did you get on their radar?
The old story of networking.
Mm-hmm.
It, of all things, my mother played bridge with somebody who had used to be an administrative assistant at Neiman Marcus.
Okay.
And it was the most roundabout connection. It had been so long ago, she only knew one person who was still there, and she gave me that name. And they weren't even in the right department, but I just contacted that person. I said, so-and-so gave me your name, and she put me right in. And I do think that, especially nowadays with the benefits of stuff like LinkedIn and Facebook, if you kind of, quote, do your homework, you can get into most places. It doesn't mean that once you get there, they'll always listen to you, but it certainly made it a lot easier to get in front of folks now.
So was it a particular way you pitched the idea, or was it, you think, just the niche aspect of your product that really caught their attention?
When I pitched it to them, I sent them samples. I knew if I just told them, hey, I've got these great dog treats, at that point, when people thought dog treats, they were thinking it's a bone shape, it's in like a plastic bag. Great,
right.
Why do we want to carry it? So I knew they had to see the packaging because that's really one of the things that makes it stand out. And I think, like I said, I was going after a niche market, and, Neiman Marcus, our markets happen to collide. They're going for that luxury consumer who's specifically looking for, gifts to buy. And so the products fit in well with them.
I see.
And at that point, I'll also say there was nobody else who was doing this type of product at that, at that level and, with that kind of very, very fine-tuned
mm-hmm.
niche. So it was easy. Once I got in front of them, it was easy because there was nobody else who's doing that.
I see. So are you, is the product still in Neiman Marcus stores everywhere?
It's not. I ended up taking it out about a year and a half later, only because I had some people, some other folks who wouldn't work with me with that relationship. And while the relationship was good from the standpoint, I think it gave my brand, it helped build my brand's equity.
Mm-hmm.
Financially, it just made more sense to actually break that relationship and be able to bring on a variety of partners. One of my favorite folks now, we work with Frontgate, who's sort of a very high-end home goods catalog, and do a lot of dropship with them.
I see. And explain dropship for someone who may not know what that is.
Oh, yeah. So dropship is depends if you want my sarcastic answer or not. dropship basically means that they put the dog treat on their website. They have the markup, so they'll, let's say, show it for $15. When you as a consumer go on, you buy the product, I actually get an email telling me it needs to be shipped. They send me the shipping slip. I bill it to their ship on their shipping account, but I get the wholesale price. So essentially the retailer is able to take the margin, and they don't have to worry about carrying the inventory. They also don't have to worry about packaging the product. From my standpoint, though, I actually really love dropship because it means that I can make sure that every product that's going out the door to a customer is the absolute freshest product versus, any of these larger folks. When they order in, they have to order in, 500 to 1,000 units, at least, and who knows how long that might sit in their warehouse. And I don't know, is that warehouse climate controlled and everything else? So for me, it actually helps from a product quality standpoint.
Yeah, and it keeps you from having to sell, right? I mean, do you have any retail space of your own or any online retail shops or anything?
I have an online retail site on my website, and I do a little bit of advertising around it, but the majority of business consumer advertising that I do is actually to promote my retailers.
Okay.
So that if somebody walks into their store, I do a lot of work with the little mom and pop pet boutique, so I want them to be able to walk into Joe's dog store down the street and see my brand and recognize the brand.
Mm-hmm.
So I have an online presence myself, but I mean, I don't focus on really pushing a lot of products through that channel.
So majority of what percentage of your business goes through the dropship method of selling?
I would say right now I probably have maybe 25%, though I am currently trying to negotiate with a couple other new catalog folks in addition to Frontgate. So that may go up this year. And then I would say probably another 60% is wholesale relationships that I have with individual boutiques.
Mm-hmm.
And then the remaining, I think I'm now up to 5%, would probably be, online sales. And then I do a couple, local festivals, that type of stuff. And that's, the last part of it.
So is there a network to allow you to get into that sort of drop shipping relationship, or do you just have to reach out to the retailers individually?
You have to reach out to them individually. The way that I was originally kind of, quote, discovered was actually through an industry trade show. For the pet industry, there's two or three big trade shows every year, and I was at one of those when Frontgate came over and approached me. But I will say it also, when you go that route, it takes about a year, or it took me about a year, to get in with them and make sure that they're happy and get everything working as it should, both on their end and on my end. So it's not a quick turnaround process. And even with the catalogs that I'm, trying to work with now, these are people that I've built relationships with for the last 2 to 3 years, and for whatever reason, we haven't had the right, I haven't had the right product mix for them. And so just as I learn more about them and, learn more about who their customers are and what they want, I'm able to kind of tweak some of my products a little bit to hopefully try and better meet that. So again, for me, it's a great relationship, but it's certainly not a quick win.
I see. Well, that's some good stuff, and I know people who are really interested in maybe having a food business of their own and using this method to distribute the food would want a little more detail, so I would probably suggest them to go to your book, Starting a Part-Time Food Business, correct, to get a little more of the details about how this works?
Yeah, yeah. The book is the culmination of basically not only everything I know, but I also interviewed six other part-time food entrepreneurs, and they're everything from, you know, a 20-something who has no savings, who started up an artisan ice cream company, to a mom who works a full-time job and has a cupcake company on the side. And then my favorite was a construction worker who found himself unemployed last year because of the bad economy. And so he started up a meat jerky company. And I actually just talked to him the other day. And even since when I wrote the book and I put his interview into the book, his company has basically doubled since when I talked to him. And so in addition to these interviews, you know, they kind of give you real life, both the ups and the downs for these entrepreneurs, but it also lays out the steps. Because like I said, the food world is a bit quirky and can sometimes seem a bit overwhelming as people start to look into it. So it lays out the steps of what you need to do and how to get all your health permits and what applies to you, what doesn't apply to you, how to find commercial kitchen space, all of that good stuff so that people can get started. Because right now food is hot and, you know, handmade food is really, really hot right now.
Okay. So backing up a little bit, how long did it take before you were making some decent money with your business?
So by year two, I was making decent money, and then year three, the economy turned. and I remember it because the stock market dropped on a Friday, and my biggest trade show of the year started the next Wednesday, and all the buyers were walking around, and nobody was buying. They were all there because they'd already committed to be there, but nobody was buying. So year three was a little bit ugly for us. But then last year, I look at it as a positive. It wasn't great, but it taught me that I needed to pull back on my spending a little bit in terms of advertising and just some of the other things that we were doing. And so by doing that last year, not only were sales much better than year three, but I actually had a better profit last year than I had year two. And so far this year, things are looking even better.
So what was your profit last year?
Before or after taxes?
Before taxes.
Before taxes, my profit was about, I always hesitate to say publicly, but it was probably right around.
You can give me a percentage if that's more comfortable with you. Maybe a percentage of your full-time income.
Oh, okay. That's fair. I would say, honestly, it was probably about a third of my full-time income. Keep in mind, I work for a nonprofit, so, you know, I'm not making millions of dollars at the nonprofit, but, you know, it's enough to make a difference in our day-to-day living.
Gotcha. That's awesome. So possibly pay your mortgage each month, somewhere around there?
It's probably just a little shy of that. Seattle's a very expensive city for me. So it would probably be, I kind of calculate that, it would probably be just a little bit shy of that. But you know what? This year, the way this year is going, I wouldn't be surprised if at the end of this year it actually could pay the mortgage.
That's awesome. And you want that, right? You want to keep growing this?
Yeah, I absolutely want to keep growing this.
Seems like,
you know, I always toy with the idea of making it full-time. So, you know, it might get there, and at some point I might be ready to step off that ledge.
Gotcha. All right. Well, good luck in that for sure. It sounds like you're very interested in the business and actually the business process itself, which is, I think, what's going to allow you to go to that next level. So you're not just a technician, right? You're actually interested in growing the business part of it itself, which I think is key to take it to the next level. So.
And that's the part that makes it fun, too, is just keeping abreast of what's going on, not only in the food industry, but, you know, marketing as a whole and, you know, social media and everything else. And then figuring out where you can, you know, take what you learned and apply it to your own business is what makes it fun.
So I think I saw, I think it was you. Were you on the Today Show, or did you get your product somehow on some morning media, big media outlet?
I did. It was Good Morning America. Okay. It was their Christmas, they were doing, you know, kind of their Christmas product roundup. And I wish I could tell you how I knew that they found out about us. but they literally called me up one day and said, oh, you've got a great product. You have to send it to us tomorrow. And so I did, and it got on the show. And when I followed up, she couldn't honestly remember if a friend had mm-hmm. seen it, if it had just been a web search. She didn't remember. But I will say, most interesting, kind of the power of just random PR. About 2 years ago, I wrote a press release. I'd switched over to using green packaging, wrote a press release about it, didn't expect a whole lot. Just about 2 weeks ago, I got a call from a reporter from Inc. magazine who was interested in doing a story about green packaging and had found me because Google search could search the press release that was on my website. So it's just, it kind of taught me that lesson. It's like everything that you do that's good for your business, even if, the New York Times may not be reading the press release, but at mm-hmm. some point with, the beauty of search engines, somebody might, and it might be, it might be really beneficial for your company.
Oh, that's good. That's good stuff. So after the early show, were sales really taken off at that point, or? I'm always curious how these morning shows do in terms of, actual conversion.
So yes and no. I think in my head it wasn't what I would have expected. I would have expected, 10,000 orders after that, and I certainly didn't get that. For me though, we probably had a couple. It was probably about 2,000 orders. Now my problem was that this ran like 2 weeks before Christmas, and I didn't have a whole lot of inventory ready. So I kind of was scrambling up until Christmas to get everything out the door. And I remember shipping stuff off and it was getting to people because I can obviously track it. It was getting to people on Christmas Eve.
Wow.
And so it was a little bit frantic because I hadn't had any warning to build up inventory for it, which is the downside of the food business. But it was still well worth it. And so glad we did it.
That's great. So last question about your business. Do you you make all the product there yourself at home or?
Yep. No, I have commercial kitchen space, which I rent out for probably about 20 hours a week. It's a commercial kitchen space that meets all health code requirements, and then mm-hmm. Make everything by hand there and package it all up and ship it out. So, yeah, it's all made by hand. Very proud of the fact it's all made by hand. All the ingredients are U.S. sourced. And then I would say now 80% of our packaging is eco-friendly.
I see. And so that's probably, besides advertising, that's probably your biggest expense, just the rent and actually creating the product, right?
Yeah, I've thought for a while about, I have a shed in my backyard that I would love to convert into a kitchen because it would save me on the rent. That's far and away my biggest cost. It's my biggest fixed cost every year. And I just, I haven't done it yet, but it's one of the things I keep toying with.
I see. So just for future food industry entrepreneurs out there, why not just do it in your own kitchen?
Unfortunately, most states don't allow that, which is the – technically for dog treats I actually could, but now, the amount of production I'm doing, it's too big for my own kitchen. Mm-hmm. But for a human food business, most states won't allow you to do it in your home kitchen. But depending on what type of food business you start, you could always rent out kitchen space from a local church. I know somebody who rented kitchen space from a synagogue, community center. So there are other workarounds. Since I now know kind of what my inventory needs are on a month-to-month basis, I sort mm-hmm. of know that I'll need more time than that. So renting the space is the easiest solution for me.
I see. So Jennifer, any mistakes you've made along the way that you'd like to share with the listeners?
Yes, the biggest mistake I ever made, and I will apologize in advance to any PR folks out there, but I put this in my book. The biggest mistake I ever made was I hired a PR firm that, my gut said wasn't the right one, but I kind of let myself be talked into it. Not that PR was a bad decision, but that this firm was the bad decision. And I ended up I ended up losing $17,000 on a PR firm that didn't understand my market, that didn't understand that, again, the food industry is very fickle, and you can't say that oh, you know, I use organic ingredients. You can't say that unless you use a certain percentage of organic ingredients, which I didn't. So I never advertised myself as organic at the time. And they were putting press releases out there saying that I was organic. And so it was a $17,000 mistake, and that was far and away, you know, for a part-time business, that was just painful to lose. And it still stands as the single biggest mistake I ever made. So if I were ever to hire a PR firm again, I would, you know, I would hire a firm that's very, very focused on my industry and knows exactly not only what's required in the industry, but also all the contacts and, you know, how the industry works.
Good. Good to know. What are, just to follow up from that, where's a good place for people to find a PR firm to work with? Or maybe how they could trust a particular PR firm. Things to look
for.
I think
two things. I think that, you know, depending on what your industry is for a part-time business, you know, trying to find networks, that you can, or other folks that you can talk to within that industry. I'm part of a group called Pet Industry Wholesalers. Mm-hmm. So even though some of us are direct competitors, you know, it's a big enough country, we're not fighting one another. So we provide a lot of information for one another. And through them, like I actually found my graphic designer who specializes in the pet industry through them. And so that really helps. If you don't have that type of network or don't have access to that type of network, I think you have to know what questions to ask, which I didn't do a good job of at all, obviously. You have to, essentially quiz them, and you want to make sure that they're as passionate about your industry and your company as you are, because you're paying them to be, and you're paying them to kind of be the voice who's out there for you. So you need to understand that, you know, I don't know if you're a construction, you know, if you're doing construction part-time, that they can't be going out there and saying XYZ, or you don't want them going out there and saying ABC. So you have to proactively ask them those questions, which, you know, I think you need to sit down and kind of ask yourself first what's important, you know, who your niche market is, and then make sure that they understand that.
That's great advice. Good stuff. Well, Jennifer, any other bits of advice or something you want to leave the listeners with?
I would just say that starting a part-time business, you know, whatever it is, whatever your passion is honestly, to me, it's the best way to go. Like I said, it gives you the flexibility to, whether you're a stay-at-home parent, meet those responsibilities and do something else on the side, or, you know, in my own situation, have a full-time position and then do this on the side. You know, it gives me the creativity. It gives me the flexibility to make big decisions quickly without red tape. And, you know, in today's economy, I always joke, I may go in tomorrow and I may be given a pink slip from my job, but nobody's ever going to give me a pink slip from my part-time job. And there's something very freeing about that. So if anybody's considering doing a part-time business, I would highly encourage them to do it.
All right. Excellent advice. Perfect. All right. Well, what's next for you? And maybe give the readers a way for them to find your product and find more about your book.
Sure. What's next for me? getting ready for the summer season at the zoo. It's the busy time. In terms of getting, you know, taking a look at Petty Four Legs, that is available at pettyfourlegs.com, which is PETITFOURLEGS.com. And then I also spend those nights that I'm not packaging up Petty Four Legs treats, I write a blog for small food entrepreneurs titled Small Food Biz, BIZ.com. And on there, you can get a whole bunch of information, either about starting up your own business, you can get links to the book, you can figure out how to contact me. So all that good stuff. And, I mean, I love to hear from folks. So drop a note and say hi.
Awesome. I'm sure they will. Well, thanks for being on with me today, and good luck in the future.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
That does it for this week's episode. Thanks so much for listening. You can find more episodes at ptmoney.com or on iTunes under the Part-Time Money Podcast. See you guys next week.